Hola, and welcome back to Vos Memos. In this episode, I'm going to use Word Slut, A Feminist Guide to Taking Back the English Language by Amanda Montell, as a framework to analyze my experience with the language of the office. So for all you corporate girlies out there, set your status to busy, and let's take a deep dive into corporate jargon on this episode of Vos Memos. Let's get into it. So far, I've been at my corporate girly job for about 6 months. And in those 6 months, I've picked up a lot of fun phrases. Sometimes they left me very confused. Sometimes they gave me like a new tool or a nice way to say something. But actually, no. Most of this corporate jargon, I feel like, just confuses people and is filler. It's really strange. Before this job, I worked at a higher ed campus, and there was never this much corporate jargon. It is insane to me how much filler people can fill up these meetings with. And then the meetings themselves probably could have been emails. So it's a lot of filler. I'm going to go through a quick list of my top, are they my favorites? Are they my least favorites? I don't know. I guess they're the weirdest phrases that I've picked up. So number one, the squeaky wheel. Once you think about it, it makes sense. It's like the squeaky wheel on a grocery cart. You don't want that cart that has the squeaky wheel. It's drawing a lot of attention to itself. It's making everyone annoyed. Something like that. Behind the eight ball. When I first heard this, I thought it meant like a magic eight ball. And not that I've ever owned one of those toys. I automatically associated it with that. And I was like, oh, it's like some kind of advice or like an interesting insight. But no, it's like an eight ball in pool. So if you're behind the eight ball, that's a really hard shot to take. This is probably the most graphic one. Can't squeeze blood out of turnips, which just means like it's an impossible task. But did we really need to make that mental image? Like, I imagined some very tragic turnips like being pulverized. And I'm like, I don't need to think about that at 8 a.m. And then longest pole in the tent. And I'm not sure I even remember what this one means. Now, I think it's something about like, this would take the longest amount of time, or it's the most difficult, or it's actually don't even remember what this one means. It doesn't come up a lot, luckily. Boil the ocean, another impossible task metaphor. Break down silos. I think this one is a little bit more useful. It's about being siloed at work and trying to bring everyone back together, bring the team back together. So I think that's a little more useful. Fire drill or putting out fires. It's just like elevating a sense of urgency that doesn't really need to be there in corporate America. Like, we're not actually firefighters. We're not actually saving lives. We're not putting out fires. So I don't know why we have to elevate our work to that level of heroism. So that one, I just roll my eyes at. In the weeds. This one's just like you're in the nitty gritty details. It's not that convoluted, so I'm okay with this one. And then take it offline. I think this one's the funniest one to me just because we're all online. So we'll be in like the middle of a meeting and people will be going off on a tangent and they'll be like, okay, we need to set up another meeting outside of this meeting to talk about this. And so instead of like saying like, let's schedule another meeting, they'd say, oh, we'll just take this offline. I'm like, okay, offline, but online just at another time. Gotcha. And maybe it made more sense like before COVID when you would actually meet in person and you didn't want to like do it on emails or Slacking or Teams chatting. So maybe it made more sense. But now 99% of our meetings are online. So at least at my workplace. So there's really no such thing as offline. And then the last one, this isn't even really corporate jargon, But it was a funny, like, anecdote for an acronym that I don't really use. And so one day, like, one of my coworkers chatted me, and he said, this is how I read it. He said, "Gah, Angela." Like, that's how I read it in my mind. I was like, why? Because it was in all caps. G-A in all caps. And I turned to my coworker, and I'm like, why did this person just chat me in all caps and, like, yell at me? And she looked at the message, and she was like, good afternoon. Like, I mean, obviously, the sense of confusion didn't last that long. But it just goes to show that the acronyms, the excessive acronyms, and the jargon and idioms that are rampant in the workplace are just not that helpful. This coworker could have just written good afternoon and I would have been just fine. I'd be like, hello, ready to help. But instead I had to, like, go through this layer of trying to figure out what you're saying before I can respond. So it just goes to show that the language of the office is a language within itself, which is so strange. And so that brings me to Word Slut, which I just finished. And I've been meaning to read it for a while because I love... So the author, Amanda Montell, she's written several books. And she's the host of Sounds Like a Cult podcast, which is such a blast. I tune into every single episode. And I love her hosting and her topics and her creativity. So love you, Amanda. I know she just released another book, so I'm behind. But I just finished Word Slut, and I felt like she gave a great rundown of all the ways that language and English specifically is structured within patriarchy and influenced by patriarchy. But I felt like a lot of her principles, of course, were general because she was trying to explain it in a general way. But I wanted to use the language of the office as a case study to see if any of her principles and anecdotes applied. So her main thesis is that our language is very male oriented. And a fun hypothetical from the book is just, what would it sound like if we had a female-oriented English? And truthfully, in the office space, I can't even imagine the difference it would make in our communication style, in the way we relate to our coworkers, just like the increased amount of empathy it would bring to the office if, in fact, our language was structured in the way that women relate to each other. I think a lot of Gen Z feel very alienated in the office because you feel like you're a shadow of yourself. You don't get to wear exactly what you want to wear. You are talking in this very strange way that's very formal, but at the same time, very, like, imaginative with all these idioms, and then very action-oriented. So there's just not a lot of personality or personhood in the way we relate to each other at work. I don't know. I think if our workplace had been women dominated from the beginning, there would be a lot more emphasis on relating to each other and having that empathy. So just setting the tone, a little sneak peek about what this discussion is going to look like. So on that idea of if women had been there from the beginning, Montell, should I call her Montell? I don't want this to sound like a paper. Amanda points out that and this is a quote, our culture's post-feudal system, which is ruled not by the fathers, but by peer-to-peer networks of brothers, which she calls a fratriarchy, if I can pronounce that right. And that's very much what the office place feels like, right? When you have all these men, and I've mostly worked in places that are male dominated. I think the education, working in higher ed, that was a little bit more even, or maybe more women dominated. But either way, the fratriarchy, like, you can feel that in just the way, like, hiring works, where if you know somebody, you can get in. It's often men at the top, right? Making all the decisions. So, and that's been true at every place I've worked at. And so inherently, the language of the office is built by men, the men at the top, the men from history, and that has seeped into our modern day language in the office, whether we realize it or not. And I think probably the most obvious place people talk about, like on social media, is just the struggle of writing an email as a woman. And it goes back and forth. Sometimes it's a video about somebody going in and deleting all of their like exclamation points and like salutations to make it sound more concise and quote professional. Or sometimes it's the other way around and they're deleting it and then they add it back in because fuck the patriarchy and I want to sound like myself in my emails. I'm not really advocating for you to add in like slay and like. I'm not advocating to sound like a valley girl in your email. But also, what is so wrong about that? If women had been running the workplace, I don't think valley girl would be an insult. It might be the norm of the way we speak. Honestly, I'm insulted by behind the eight ball. What is that? I'm insulted by squeezing blood out of turnips. Okay? I think that's the same thing as adding a bunch of likes and totallys and exclamation marks in your email. I'm not actually mad about it, but it's just an interesting parallel. The next topic I want to talk about is UpTalk, which is kind of niche. I knew about it before because I took a linguistics class, so I still feel like it's niche. But it's that sound at the end of a sentence where it makes you sound like you're asking a question. Some accents, like Australian accent, I think was one of the examples in the book, they just have UpTalk built into their language, so there's no negative stereotype to it. Okay, should I try to do an Australian accent? Oh, gosh. A dingo ate my baby. No. What was that? Hello, mate. Mate. It's kind of going up at the end. I'm not doing it justice. Honestly, if you just listen, now that I've pointed it out, you'll probably just hear me have UpTalk in my... UpTalk? See, like that. I'm trying to illustrate what I'm talking about, but I think my voice has UpTalk in it already. So especially when I get tired towards the end of the podcast, you'll probably hear more and more UpTalk. But the problem with UpTalk is that some people find it extremely annoying, and it's often associated with women and possibly the gay community. Not sure on that one as much, but definitely more prominent among women. And Amanda kind of argues that it's used as a defense mechanism so that we don't come off as bossy or bitchy, which also English language, why are those negatively associated with women? Little quirk of English patriarchy, English being rooted in patriarchy. But the UpTalk allows us to subvert that in the workplace, at least, and in other places potentially where women are being leaders. And so they use UpTalk to make everything sound like a question, and then that makes it sound a little bit more collaborative and kind of undermines our leadership because we are trying to level out the playing field instead of asserting ourselves. But it's just one of the tools that we've evolved inside of this language system and the office that is inherently unfriendly to women. And I'll read this quote from Amanda because I think it's really powerful. It's an unconscious feeling that speechlessness is just part of being a woman, and that to be too loud or assertive would mean losing female identity, which is precious because it is a huge part of who they are. That one really hits me because, yeah, literally being a leader, being assertive, is counter to what our culture considers feminine. And so I'm not saying that femininity is at all tied to being a woman. You could read Amanda's entire opening chapter of the book about what is womanhood, what is femininity, how did it come to be what it is today. It's very convoluted the definition of being a woman. But what I am saying is that our language has an idea of what it means to be a woman and to be assertive, to be a leader in the office is counter to that idea, which is why it feels so uncomfortable to be a leader and a woman in the office, or at least part of the reason. There's many. And so that's all wrapped into uptalk. But another point I want to talk about is active listening. Amanda has a quote in the book about how linguists defined active listening, which is all those little phrases in between, like, yeah, right, mm-hmm, like nodding along, showing that you're listening. There's that one episode in The Office where they're trying to teach Dwight how to sell to a female client, and he looks insane trying out all of their tips on active listening. But that's what they're talking about in that episode, is showing that you're listening. The problem with active listening in the workplace, in the modern workplace, in the hybrid workplace, is that active listening does not translate well to Teams or Zoom or whatever digital meeting conference room you're using. Everyone who enters a meeting, at least on Teams, after the initial four people is automatically muted. And the common etiquette in these types of meetings is to mute yourself because maybe you're breathing heavily, maybe your background is noisy. Like, it makes sense why you would want most of the people, or all the people that aren't talking, to be muted. However, that also mutes all the active listening that's going on, if people are listening. That's a whole nother conversation. But the problem is, when I'm talking on a meeting and everyone's screens are black, nobody has their camera on, I can't tell if people are nodding, and everyone's muted, so I can't hear if they're listening, it just sounds like I'm talking into a void. And women are very good at active listening. And so when I'm talking to women in person, they are showing me that they're listening. And that's what I've grown accustomed to. And that's what I listen for. But then when I'm talking on Teams and no, I'm not getting any feedback, and it's uncomfortable for men too, I'm sure, but to a lesser extent because they're not socialized to care about that and to give it to other people as well. And so for women specifically, if we're looking at active listening, it makes Teams so much worse because all of your clues that people are listening to you are gone. And so it goes back to my initial question, what would it be like if the office and the language of the office had been built by women? What would it look like if our digital conference rooms had been built by women? How would active listening be part of that software? And maybe that would mean it has more automatic mics that turn on to, like, let people say those mm-hmms and yas on, like, a quieter channel. Who knows? We don't have that technology right now because the technology was not built with the way women speak in mind. It was, I mean, a lot of it was built during COVID, so it was built fast and dirty, and that's what we're stuck with now. But the reality is, like, this is a problem in software, a ubiquitous problem in software, where women's feedback and women's mannerisms and women's needs are never at the forefront of building these things. And now, probably 90% of computers in America have Zoom on them and have completely silenced a huge part of the way women communicate with each other. And this is, like, heartbreaking when I say it out loud. I want to underline or underscore that active listening is different than interrupting, which women are also, there are more women victims of interruptions than men. So can't win. If you're a woman, you just can't win. The more I think about how our office and corporate life is going in America, it makes me more mad because I'm like, there is just no way that women's needs are being fully met as we continue to trudge forward in the digital age of these hybrid jobs and these remote jobs. And I would love to be in a fully remote job, but it's going to mean sacrificing a little bit more of myself every single time I log into a digital conference room. I have two more points that I want to talk about. One, profanity in the office, and then two, I need to play devil's advocate, right? Like the importance of professionalism and professional speak. So profanity in the office makes me really uncomfortable. And I asked myself, I'm like, why am I so uncomfortable when people are swearing in these meetings? And it's not like they're swearing at people. That would be a different thing. That's like directly insulting someone. That would be a completely different topic. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about when people might call an idea shitty. I will say that Amanda's book gave me the answer to why it makes me so uncomfortable, even if it's just shitty. Why does shitty make me uncomfortable when people talk about it in the office or use that word in the office? And it's because women are socialized to be polite and not to swear. And I realized like that is true. Like I've always had a problem with swearing, and it was very uncomfortable. It was a very uncomfortable process for me to learn how to swear. And Amanda talks about this too, where I was called cute when I used like a bad word. And it took me a long time before people took me seriously when I like threw in a swear word to emphasize my point. And I think it's still to this day the reason why I'm so uncomfortable when people in the office swear, because I'm like, that's not polite. We're not being polite in the office. And the office is like a more formal setting, so we should be polite. And it really only just clicked when I read this book, because I was like, why am I being so uptight about this? Like, who cares if someone says that's shitty? They're not insulting my work. Like, I'm not taking offense to it. I'm still getting constructive feedback. Like, why should I care? But it's because I was born and raised to care. So I thought that was very interesting, and it still hasn't resolved my feelings on it, unfortunately. I still like struggle with hearing that language in the office, and I don't really say anything because I'm not going to say anything, but I'm also not going to do it either. And that kind of leads into, or segues into, my next point, which there is still some importance to the way professional speak has evolved. It's very direct and clear. Some of my favorite words in the office are like align, target, ETA. It's all about leaving room for adjustment, giving grace to your coworkers, but also trying to stay all on the same page and just like work together as a team and update each other, be transparent with each other. And the one like weird thing about the language of the office is that we have an offshore team at my company, and many companies do. And it's strange to me because English is not their first language, right? Or maybe it's one of multiple languages they speak. So either way, they've got multiple languages rattling around in their brain. And then we're throwing all these idioms at them with like boil the ocean, which is not clear or concise. So it's very confusing to me how it has evolved in parallel, these idioms that are very corporate jargon, don't make any sense, and the very direct and clear style. So kind of goes back to that email that we were writing together at the beginning. Add whatever you want in there, because if we can throw in all this corporate jargon that doesn't make any sense, then who cares? People are going to figure out what you want to say. They'll just schedule a meeting if they really need to understand you. So I'll end with reading a poem from one of my latest zines. The zine is called But I Still Love Technology, a poetry zine, and you can find it on angelageorge.com/zineland if you want to read the rest of it. I have it up there for free. And my last poem in here is called On Being a Digital Employee. And this is the first time I'm doing a reading of it. So, welcome. Good afternoon, I say into the black void. Circles glow back at me, ambivalent towards the existence of this meeting. Just give it a minute for people to gather. Are we people anymore? We are pixels and a tally that signals a quorum of eyes glued to the same window. Can you see my screen? I ask to no one in particular. A thumbs up emoji replaces the casual conference room conversations, now silenced by muted mics. Am I audible? Maybe I am babbling to myself, musing through my spreadsheet while the watchers witness my mouse jiggle in front of their faces. My voice, bound to bounce around the home office, will never reach their ears. I'll see you in the next one, I say, although I've never really seen them at all. And that's on the dystopia that is currently corporate America. Thanks for sticking with me through this in-depth analysis of corporate jargon. These episodes are uploaded bi-weekly, so stay tuned for the next one. If you are on Instagram, you can follow the podcast at Voz Memos, or you can follow on my blog, angelageorge.com/voz-memos, and I'll see you soon. Bye.